On the telephone this morning, I have Hans Creek of SAFE, who wants to explain to us what SAFE does and how it came into being. So good morning, Hans.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, Hans, you're at the coalface of working to bring about better conditions for the animals that we in many cases have involved in factory farming. So could you tell us a little bit about how what SAFE is, how it came into being, and then we can expand it from there.
Sure. Yeah, well, New Zealand has a number of animal groups, and SAFE has found a certain niche within that, in those groups, and that SAFE is New Zealand's second largest animal advocacy organization. We have been in New Zealand since 1933, so that's a long time, as part of the British Union for the Abolition of Vivisection. And so in the past, SAFE was an organization focusing on animal experimentation rather than any of the other animal rights issues. Over the years, though, SAFE has expanded its work, so we're working on lots of different issues like factory farming, animals and entertainment, etc. And therefore, they saw the need to change the name from the British Union for the Abolition of Vivisection into SAFE, and which now stands for Save Animals from Exploitation. We are a nationwide organization with offices in Christchurch and in Auckland. And we're quite a dynamic group, a lot of young people involved. We employ about 8 staff. And we are certainly growing in popularity within New Zealand in that we are getting more public support, that we are listened to better, that certainly the media is taking a keen interest in what we do. And because of all that, we have been managing to get the issues of animal exploitation in New Zealand out to the public. And luckily, we can see people making changes because of that. We believe that we are here to raise awareness on those issues that are normally hidden behind closed doors. And we know that people are inherently opposed to cruelty to animals. But often they unwittingly support cruelty to animals because they don't know that their purchasing behavior in the supermarket, for instance, actually influences how animals are being kept and killed. So we see ourselves as an organization that raises awareness on those issues, and then it's up to the public to make up their own mind with regards to, you know, how are they going to change. Like, some people might decide not to buy battery eggs and buy free-range eggs. Other people decide to go all the way and become vegans and don't support any animal exploitation whatsoever. But that's up to the people individually to decide. We are there to put the facts in front of them and to show people what actually happens to animals in New Zealand. And increasingly, we are, you know, also through our website and through the high profile we have in the media, we certainly are able to put the picture of animal suffering into the New Zealand living room. And we see change as a result, which is very encouraging.
Are you getting any support from government? Bearing in mind that I'd say that the Greens, of course, will always support you on issues particularly related to this. Anyone else?
Yeah, no. SAFE is it's a not-for-profit organization, so we're getting our only source of income is donations that we get from the public. So we're not linked to the government whatsoever. We're getting no money from them or no support. and out of in the political world, it's quite interesting in that we have political supporters, like a lot of MPs, from all sorts of parties, actually. Virtually every party, there are a number of MPs that are supporters of SAFE, because, you know, we never see this as such a political issue. You know, this is about the respectful treating of animals, and that really should be done by everybody. But we obviously are getting a lot of support from the Green Party, because they are clearly more thinking our way than other parties that might be more farmer-focused, like the National Party is much more farming-focused and therefore would be less likely to support us. But within those parties, you will have individual MPs that are very supportive of especially some individual campaigns that we run. And a good example there is our most high-profile campaign, the Battery Hen campaign, which is supported by a large number of MPs right across the border of all parties, which is really encouraging to see.
I know most supermarkets now, of course, have the organic section, the free-range section, and then the so-called factory section. So we are making progress, though I find a lot of the small independent sort of grocery stores away from and from the supermarkets will sell basically only the cheapest kind of food. So that's, I guess, a bit of a challenge. Could you tell us a little bit about the fact that the chickens will live on a area size of an A4 piece of paper?
Mm. Yeah, when you talk about vegetarian farming, so you're talking about keeping chickens for egg production. About 90% of chickens in New Zealand are kept what we call battery cages. And these cages are so small that each chicken has less space than an A4 sheet of paper. So, if your listeners can sort of picture an A4 sheet of paper, which is just a normal piece of writing paper, a chicken has less space to live her life on, her entire life on, which is, you know, clearly unacceptable. The animal can't walk on it, obviously. She can't spread her wings. But also, it's not only the lack of space, it's also that the battery cages are extremely barren. There's nothing for the chicken to do in those cages. So there's no nest box, there's no perch for a chicken to sleep on, there's no dust for a chicken to dust bathe in. And all these things are very, a part of what a chicken normally does. So if you start to take all those natural behaviors away from a chicken, or don't allow her to express those behaviors, that causes a lot of frustration, and as a result, those animals suffer a lot. And they also have physical injuries by rubbing against the wires of the cage, because you can imagine in such a small space that, there's three chickens or four chickens normally in the cage. If one wants to move, the others have to move as well. So that causes a lot of stress for the animals in there. And it's a system that is widely condemned as extremely inhumane. And like in Europe, for instance, they're phasing their battery cages out. They should be gone by 2012. Some other countries are even moving faster. And Sweden and Switzerland, for instance, have already got rid of battery cages. So we are behind. And unfortunately, our government has decided to keep battery cages for the time being and say to the farmers, well, you got to give them a bit more space. And the equivalent of extra space that they're going to get in 10 years' time is the size of two credit cards, which still gives their overall space is less than an A4 sheet of paper. So that's just a mockery. And it's also against the New Zealand animal welfare legislation, which requires animals to be able to express their normal behavior patterns, which they clearly can't do in a cage like that. So unfortunately, we have an Animal Welfare Act, which is in itself not so bad, but the way it's administered is appalling. And the animals never stand a chance that way.
The Swedish government seems to be so advanced in so many different fields, believe it or not, from the elimination of fossil fuels by 2020, about 80% of its farming produce now is organic. It's just so unfortunate that New Zealand seems to be dragging the chain in so many areas when we're supposed to be a knowledge country, and we're supposed to be also as a compassionate country. So, yes, I'd like to be able to see chooks running out when it's wet and scratching in the grass and going for worms and all the other microflora in the ground. I just trust that...
It's going to happen sooner or later. When we started our campaign, you virtually had no free-range production, commercial free-range production at all. And now over 300,000 chickens live on free-range farms. So there is a fairly rapid growth in that industry. But also when you think about it from a more national perspective, it's actually in New Zealand's interest to go into those, to really enhance our... We have a clean and green reputation as it is. Whether it's deserved, I doubt it very much, but we have it. And we can capitalize on that by really putting out those pictures there of that we treat our animals humanely and that we farm them in a free-range manner. One of the largest free-range egg companies, for instance, in New Zealand, they're exporting a lot of their eggs to America and to Singapore, and they are really cashing in on that New Zealand clean and green image, and people really like to buy those New Zealand free-range eggs. So it would be very good, and this is an interesting aside, but they are the only egg producers in New Zealand that are actually bringing in export dollars, because they are the only ones exporting. So you don't see a battery farmer exporting, because all these countries have their own battery egg industries. But free range, there's a real opportunity, and this is only the beginning of it. I mean, this is a huge potential for New Zealand to not only treat animals better and also be environmentally be more responsible, but actually also to make a bit of money, which nothing wrong with.
And we've got the space and the climate too. Chooks can go out every day.
Oh, absolutely. we are perfectly suited. And the good thing is with free-range farms, chicken farms, is that you can utilize small blocks of land that are not suitable for other livestock farming because they're too small. You know, 10 or 20-acre block can actually provide a family with an income through free-range eggs. So you can utilize all these blocks that are sort of uneconomical to be farmed in any other manner in a very meaningful way. And this is another thing. By going sort of more small-scale free-range farming, you're also going to employ quite a few more people within that industry. So that certainly has potential.
Yes. And tell me, how about the situation with pigs? I see Winston Churchill has a statement, and he says, yeah. "I'm fond of pigs. Dogs look up to us, cats look down on us, but pigs treat us as equals."
Well, that's right. Yeah, I wish we would treat pigs as equals, though. The things we do to pigs are just appalling, even in New Zealand, when we have all that space. I mean, the fact is that if we were to treat dogs as we treat pigs, you would be prosecuted and you would be jailed. And that really says a lot about our double standards that we have in New Zealand. Unfortunately, in New Zealand, most of the fattening pigs, so these are the pigs that people eat, are kept in small, dark concrete pens where they have nothing to do. And these animals are, you know, pigs are highly intelligent. You can't really compare them to like puppies. And to keep animals in their own excrement in a couple of little concrete walls with nothing to do is just appalling. And the mothers of those pigs are even worse off. They are kept in sow stalls and farrowing crates, and they are metal crates that are so small that the animal can't even turn around in them. All they can do is stand up and lie down, and they're kept in there for weeks or months on end. And like I said, if you do that to a dog, you get prosecuted and you get jailed. And yet we allow that to happen to pigs and animals that are equal to dogs in intelligence, if not more intelligent. So, you know, why do we do this? And we think it's an awareness issue as well. We think if the public finds out more about these things, you know, they will speak out, and people already do. Consumer polls have shown that 80% of the public is opposed to keeping chickens in cages, and 87% keeping pigs in crates. What it now requires is for legislators to follow up on that public concern. And unfortunately, you know, the farming lobby is powerful in New Zealand, and they spend a lot of money lobbying government and lobbying the relevant committees not to introduce change. Because, you know, they want to keep it the way it is, because they don't want to reinvest in other systems.
Yes, conservatism versus change. I presume, but you can't always say this, but a lot of change happens in the cities where people are talking with each other because they see each other a lot. And of course, a lot of people from cities, when they go out to farms, get quite shocked when they see all this.
Yeah.
And could you tell us a little bit more about pigs? Because they're a lovely animal when it's in a clean environment, if we give them a clean environment.
Well, if you, because all people have this, people that don't know pigs often have the impression that they're like dirty animals, you know, and that's like filthy pig, and you've got all the expressions. But actually, when you get to know a pig, they are extremely personable animals, and actually, pigs don't like to be dirty either. But pigs can't sweat like dogs can, and therefore, for a pig to cool down, a pig would look like going to water. And if you gave a pig a choice between mud and water, they will actually choose the water. But they also have to go into the mud because it cools them down, and that's really important for a pig. So, but when you look at the animal from a behavior point of view, they can be very affectionate. They can really recognize the people that that look after them. And you know, they like to do things like roll over, and you can scratch them on their tummies and things like that. So they're real gentle animals, and you know, they're very good mothers as well, and they bond with their babies and look after them pretty well. But what we do on the farm is, you know, we stick them in a crate where they can't nurse their babies properly. They can just lie down, and the babies can suckle, and they get removed after just 4 weeks. But the mother can never really nuzzle them properly. She can't build a nest for them, which she normally would do if she would have the opportunity. So, you know, really the way we treat these animals is pretty appalling. And, you know, basically every person that knows a pig, that has dealt with a pig, that has sort of, you know, looked after a pig, will be opposed to keeping pigs in crates and things like that, because they understand what sort of suffering it would mean to the animal. And I, if we have the time, I can give you a quick example. I visited a factory farm when they were putting young pigs, young female pigs, and they're called gilts, for the first time in farrowing or in sow stalls. And these animals, they came out of a group housing situation, so they were put in individual crates. And suddenly they couldn't turn around anymore. They couldn't move anymore. And these animals were throwing themselves against the bars and biting the bars, getting really distressed and wanting to get out. And I observed this for about an hour. And it was extremely painful to watch. And then I went back 2 days later, and the pigs were still doing the same things. They were throwing themselves against it. They were screaming. They wanted to get out. And some of them were rubbing against the wire so badly that they were bleeding from their sides a little bit. And, you know, awful stuff. And then I went back a week later, and what I noticed is when I walked into this farm is, well, how quiet it was. And what had happened is that these pigs had given up, and they were sitting on their backsides, which I normally don't, with their heads down. And when you read animal behaviorist research on these things, is that it's depression. So the animals had given up. They realized they couldn't get out. They couldn't find those metal bars, and just given up. And they just sit there. And, you know, it was heartbreaking. That third visit especially, it was heartbreaking to see that these animals' spirits were just broken. And, you know, and I know this is a very sad story, but this is the reality. So maybe on the upside of it is, as people are finding out, more and more people now are changing away from buying products like this. We know that there is an increasing demand for like you mentioned, organic and free-range produce. And because that's where it will have to go, because, you know, the government is failing to do something about it for those animals. You know, they're clearly under the influence of the farming lobby, so it's now up to consumers to act and do something about this.
What about a nest? Could you describe a sow's nest for us?
Yeah, if you keep a pig free-range and a pig is ready to give birth, what a pig does is build this huge nest. So if you provide them straw, for instance, they will drag all the straw into their hut, and they will build up a nest like over a meter high sometimes with straw. They really make a big effort, because pigs are heavy animals, and they need to provide their piglets with a nice, safe environment. So it needs to be soft, and the sow doesn't want to roll onto her piglets in a normal situation. So by putting all this nesting material in, the sow will keep her little piglets warm and will protect them. And they will go through great efforts. Now, if you put a pig in a farrowing crate, which is just a metal contraption on bare concrete often, then the pig can't do that. But she still has such an instinctive need of doing that I've seen pigs scraping their noses, making that particular movement, that how they push the straw up, but then they do it without the straw, straight on the bare concrete, and they just can rub their noses raw sometimes. It's just an awful sight. But that just shows you how strong that instinctive behavior is of building a nest for their piglets. So, again, she can't do that. And pigs, when you see pigs looking after their babies, it's just in a free-range situation, it's a real fun thing to watch. Whereas in a farrowing crate, the pig just lies there, and the piglets drink, and mum has no choice. That's all she can do, and it's a real sad thing.
I've seen a mother pig at an agricultural show in Australia feeding her, I don't know, 12 piglets.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, it's a wonderful sight to see, isn't it? Just to see, she's just lying back, and she's sort of dozing, very contented smile on her face, and all these little piglets just having a fantastic time.
Oh, absolutely. It is great to see. And yeah, and the sad thing is as well, on a factory farm, is after 4 weeks those piglets are removed, which is, you know, normally they stay with mum for at least 8 weeks. But and the reason for that is because mum will go through her new cycle. So they remove the piglets, and then straight away have mum made pregnant again. And then she goes back into a farrowing crate where she can't turn around again and still stay there during her pregnancy. So it's... you know, it's a cycle of misery for those animals, and if you contrast it with the ones that have a more natural way of living, it's huge. It's just a shame. Look, I always say this, I would love to take every New Zealander onto a farm and say, have a look for yourself. Just look for yourself. And I'll bet you when people walk away from that, they would not be buying any intensively farmed products anymore. It's just a given. If people see it, they will be opposed to it. And that's why farmers keep it behind closed doors. Could you try, as a member of the public, to come and visit a pig farm and show and to see how these animals live? You will have not a hope in hell of getting in there. They will not show you. And you will never see footage that farmers put out. You'll never see on the packaging, you know, a factory-raised pig, and here's a nice picture of how the pig lives. They will never do that, because they know if people get to see it, people don't want it. And that's one of the things why we're trying to get mandatory labeling for eggs in New Zealand. In Europe, for instance, they have labeling, so it must say that if the eggs are produced by battery hens, it must say that. And the industry here is very much opposed to it, and the reason that they're opposed to it is because, you know, fewer people will buy their products. But we feel people have the right to know how their eggs are produced and how their meat has been produced.
I agree. You'll never, ever see video footage or movie footage of a abattoir, of a freezing works, of the animal going in at one end and coming out as packaged product, because it's so upsetting that people would just turn away from eating meat.
Mm.
Yes. Could I ask about the... Does the sow mate with a boar? Is it now, or is it AI?
A bit of a mixture.
A bit of a mixture.
Yeah.
I see. Oh, can we move over now to the sheep situation?
Yep.
If that's all right, because the merinos have a very difficult time, don't they?
Yeah. Well, half the merino sheep in New Zealand. So you're talking about and there's 2 million merino. So you're talking about 1 million merino sheep in New Zealand. Are mules, and now I'm sure that many of your listeners would have never heard of the term mules, and it's a term that's named after Mr. Mules, as an Australian guy, where they have, as you know, lots of merino sheep. And merino sheep are susceptible to get fly strike, and that means that blowflies lay eggs in the dirty wool of the sheep, and when these eggs hatch, the maggots can then eat into the skin of the animal, which is an extremely painful and horrible situation. And in order to reduce that somewhat, some farmers resort to the practice of mulesing, and that means that when the animals are usually about 12 weeks old and are still young little sheep, they cut away, just with hand clippers, cut away the skin around the animal's bottom, and that's the size of about a saucer. And that's done without an anesthetic. And that actually means putting like scissors underneath the skin of an animal and then simply cutting the skin off. Well, anyone who has ever had a paper cut will know how painful that is. So you can just imagine to cut away a big flap of skin like that. And what happens then is that it takes about 5 weeks for that big gaping bleeding wound to heal. And once it's healed, it's scar tissue, and wool doesn't grow on scar tissue. So that means that the animals will have a cleaner bottom. And that saves on labor for the farmer, because they don't have to bring him in as often for things like crutching and all that. But it's a practice, again, you know, do it to any other animal and they will jail you straight away, and they will call you a sadist and whatever. And yet, on sheep, we allow this to happen. And it's appalling. And also, it's unnecessary, because when I just said before that 1 million sheep are mules and the other million merino sheep are not, that means that you don't have to do it. I mean, there's half the farmers approving that you don't have to go through those extents to farm merino sheep. So it's a labor-saving device. You know, you have to hire fewer people over a longer period of time to basically keep your sheep in good condition. So it saves money, and that's why farmers do it. It's purely about money. But again, New Zealanders are unfamiliar with the practice, and if they would show that on TV, people would be absolutely appalled, and you know, and so they should. It's just an appalling practice. And in Australia, where they carry out this practice on over 20 million sheep, they are subject to a huge international boycott organised by PETA, which is an American animal rights group. And that has really divided the industry in Australia, and it has really has resulted in major buyers of Australian wool not buying Australian wool anymore. And it is only a matter of time, and that's going to happen in New Zealand. And I know that the merino industry is aware of this, and that they're also moving towards getting rid of mulesing in New Zealand. And we have been talking to the industries involved, and they know that SAFE will be starting a major campaign on mulesing later in the year, unless we're going to get some real concrete steps taken to see an end to mulesing. And we actually, on this issue, we believe that this is going to happen. We believe that mulesing is going to be stopped in New Zealand. I mean, that would be silly not to, because they're going to lose so many customers. You know, we have footage of New Zealand sheep being mules, and it's so graphic that people are simply going to say, "Whoa, you know, I'm not buying this stuff anymore." So it's an issue that we think that's very winnable, and that's going to save a million sheep from being mutilated each year, which is obviously going to be a very good thing.
And from what I gather, sheep are good friends. They have an individual life.
Of course they have an individual life. Every animal has. A lot of people look at sheep like, oh, you know, that's just a dumb animal. When you, again, look at the research, they show that sheep are actually extremely responsive. They can recognize their fellow sheep as individuals, so they recognize them individually. They also recognize people individually. And also they can remember people that have looked after them, especially people that have looked after them in a kind manner, years after, you know, if they won't see somebody for a couple of years and then see the person again, they actually recognize that person. You know, sheep have individual personalities. It's just that we are too dumb to recognize it. So I don't think sheep are dumb. It's us for our lack of ability of recognizing that every animal has an individual life to lead and has their own preferences, their own needs, and their own emotions.
Yes, on your website, www.safe.org.nz, you have it that sheep can mourn absent individuals and feel emotions such as jealousy, love, and loss.
Mm, that's right. And that's not us saying it. That's researchers saying it. I mean, you'll find it's the whole animal thing is becoming more and more researched lately, because a lot of people are becoming really interested in animal rights issues or animal welfare issues, or even the farming industry realizes that if they, you know, stick to their old ways, they're going to lose out sooner or later. So you see a lot of research initiated. And what they're finding out is that, you know, and those animals are so much more like us, because people never gave animals, allocated emotions to animals. They think that they just somehow are little machines that move along. Well, animals have emotions, just like you and me. They feel sadness, they feel happiness. And I think every person that has a dog will be appalled when you say, oh, your dog doesn't feel any emotions or can't feel any pain. Because they know, of course they can. They know when their dog is happy, they know when their dog is sad. But yet we don't seem to want to think that the farm animals that we you know, exploit and kill could have the same feelings, because that will make us very uneasy, doesn't it? But they do.
I understand, yes. Mm. And what other situations are you in, campaigns?
All right, well, save as long-standing campaigns with regards to the use of exotic animals in circuses, for instance. You know, the keeping of elephants and lions and apes in circuses is just really a thing of the past, and it should not be tolerated anymore. These animals live in extremely cramped quarters, tiny little cages in which they travel all the time but also live. And, you know, they're forced to do stupid tricks. And as, you know, we always say as long as silly people continue to go to the circus, it will probably carry on. But fortunately, New Zealanders are wising up, and they're not really frequenting the circuses anymore. And as a result, you know, there used to be four animal-based circuses in New Zealand. There's only one left, and that's really on its last legs as well. So it won't be long before we have a time in New Zealand where animal-based circuses are gone, and you will see the higher quality acts of, you know, the overseas circuses, Sir Live, for instance, where it's absolutely amazing stuff, but no animals. It's just you see quality performances from human beings, and no silly dressed-up animals doing stupid tricks. So that's really moving into that direction. And I suppose another topical issue at the moment is duck shoot season, which is only a couple of weeks away. And you know, when you have thousands of people going out on the water with a drink and a shotgun and blasting away at live sentient animals and crippling and maiming tens of thousands in the process. And then this is one of those appalling things that happens in New Zealand. You know, we'll be focusing on the fact that every year tens of thousands of pukeko get shot. Why? Nobody seems to really know. They're not a pest. You can't eat them, but they shoot them anyway. And it's just for fun, just, you know, thrill kill. And we think that has no place in a society that purports to care for animals.
Yes, I can understand that. It's a difficult one, but solely because man's encroaching on their territory all the time, and particularly, say, pukekos and wild ducks, etc., because we're just expanding right across the wetlands, etc.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's right. We're already putting pressure on the animals by taking over their territories because we're building our houses on the waterfronts and or we're reclaiming the wetlands to turn them into farmland. And then we go out and kill them as well for fun. So, you know, it's a pretty bad combination. And we understand, although there's been very little research done on, say, on Pukeko, is that in certain areas they are certainly on the decline already. And so we want to know why they shoot them, and we want to see justification for it, and if there's not, we want a ban on the shooting of Pukeko. But we're really using Pukeko as an example to show that, they're just being killed for fun rather than anything else. Also, it's typical that most duck shooters will go out only for the first day or the first weekend just for to have a whole lot of fun in their book anyway, and for the rest you don't see them much on the water anymore. It's a funny little traditional thing that New Zealand has, but we really have a fishing, hunting, killing culture here, and unfortunately that seems to be pretty much ingrained, although slowly it is slowly disappearing because we can see hunting numbers drop significantly because younger people are not taking up hunting, which is a really positive thing, because they're opposed to it, but also because they've got other things to do, I suppose, nowadays, and that's why you see the hunting lobby desperately trying to recruit more young people, and they're making it so easy by giving season pass hunting for $2, for instance, just to get kids involved. And last year we did a campaign against having really young kids involved. You can take a five-year-old out shooting. So a five-year-old can actually carry a shotgun and fire at live animals that can feel pain. So you can just imagine how good a shot a five-year-old would be. So this is going to simply increase crippling rates in the animals and kind of create more suffering. And also you're telling a five-year-old that it's fine to lift up a shotgun and try to shoot animals that happen to be flying past. And that's a really bad message for the children involved as well. So, it's a bit of an awful situation, but, we can only do so much, I suppose.
Yes, you're doing wonders. Overseas shipping of animals, are we involved in this, bearing in mind that Australia just recently has been sending lots of shiploads, millions and millions of sheep to the Middle East, and just recently in Egypt, some people photographed or videoed how the butchers were treating the animals in Egypt, and it was just horrendous how they were and which meant the Australian Minister for Agriculture has actually stopped sending sheep to Egypt. Are we sending shipments overseas?
We are, but we're not sending animals for slaughter at the moment to the Middle East, where those problems were identified and actually have been known about for years, but this time it was just exposed. I know the person who went out and took the footage personally, and she's a very, very brave person to go in there and film that. But the authorities have always known about it. They just have ignored it. But they couldn't ignore it once that footage was shown on TV. But New Zealand at the moment is not sending any live shipments of animals for slaughter. That doesn't say that can't happen again. There are companies in New Zealand that would love to do it, but they have to meet certain conditions, and it's not an easy thing to do from here, but it can be done, and we used to do it all the time. What we are doing increasingly is sending sheep and cattle over for breeding purposes, and they go to China and to Mexico a lot. And these animals get looked after a bit better because they want them to arrive alive, because, if you want them for breeding purposes, they better be alive. But there are still real issues with that as well. When you start sending animals, land-dwelling animals on a boat on journeys that can take 3 to 4 weeks, it creates real problems, and we're seeing regular evidence and statistics of animals dying on those boats. I mean, a few years ago there was a shipment to Mexico where over 100 cattle died because the ship hit rough weather, and these are all, you're talking pregnant dairy cows here, and these animals starting to abort their calves on board and falling over, breaking legs, and it was just a big nightmare. And even in December last year, only a few months ago, it was about 14 or 18 cattle died on a boat, and every time those animals die. And now we're only talking about the ones that die, but all the other ones have obviously been suffering a lot of stress on those journeys as well. So it's not a good situation, and also we think a bit of a backward step for New Zealand, because what we're doing is we're building up the dairy industry in China and in Mexico, which seems a silly thing to do. Look at what happened in the kiwi fruit industry when you started to sell your plants overseas and they start their own industries and you start to lose out in the end. But anyway, farmers can get good money for it, so that's what they do. But again, the animals suffer as a result.
When we put animals into factory farming situation, you'll find, of course, I presume, I don't know, I don't eat chicken or meat, so the taste would be one different, but also be no vitality in the food.
Well, yeah, a lot of people believe it. I'm like you, I don't eat the product either, so I couldn't talk from first-hand experience, but there's a lot of people that certainly in the meat can taste the difference. There's no doubt about it when you have an animal eating a much more varied diet when it's outside, you know, grasses and whatever it can find nutrients in the soil. It's completely different than when an animal gets fed a standard mesh all the time. But there's also a lot of people that believe that when an animal is ill-treated and doesn't have an opportunity to exercise and the quality of the meat is considerably less anyway. From my perspective, you know, as a vegetarian or as a vegan, I know we can, as human beings, live extremely healthy lives without causing any suffering to animals. So I don't see any point in eating them, be it in a factory farmed or a free-range manner. But I certainly would advocate for people that do want to continue eating animals, that at least they can have take the responsibility on to ensure that these animals have lived at least a fairly decent life. So I think that's the least people can do. And unfortunately, a lot of people rather not know, because, you know, they feel bad about it. But it's an easier thing not to know. And we think that's not good enough, and that's why we're keep on putting those images and keep on putting the facts in front of people, so that they can see that, all right, this is happening here, let's do something about it. But, you know, we see it every day. We get approached by people every single day and say, look, I saw some of your footage, or I saw you on TV, or I heard about this, what you guys are doing on the radio, and you know, we heard about the issues that you explained about it, and we decided not to participate anymore, and we've become vegetarian, and we hear it every single day. Yesterday, for instance, I spoke to a family, two adults and two kids, and they find out about factory farming, and they look on our website and everything, and thought, well, you know, we don't want to support this. And rather than just not buying factory farmed meat, they thought it would be easier just to turn vegetarian, and they've been thinking about it for a while, they bit the bullet, I suppose, and they became vegetarians. And we see this happening all the time. And I think as long as farmers keep on ill-treating their animals, people are going to be turned off their products as well. So I think, to be honest, if farmers want to continue long-term, then the better treatment of their animals is probably in their interest, because it will weaken our arguments, I suppose, for people to go vegetarian. So, yeah, it's going to happen sooner or later.
Well, say for a hit at the Wild Foods Festival in Hokitika, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was fun. We went for the first time this year, and you know, the Wild Food Festival is a bit of a macho thing. People go and eat sheep testicles and dead possum bits and all that. And nobody really pays any attention to all the suffering that lies behind what was for sale at the Wild Food Festival, which is 99% meat-based. So we decided to go, and we went with a vegan stall. And we decided to showcase some vegan food, and we were selling, we called it meaty vegan gonads, which was obviously to try to keep it in keeping with the Wild Food Festival a little bit and have a bit of fun with it. And we were a hit. We had some very provocative images up, and then nothing too upsetting, but we kept it more in a bit of a positive theme. And we even were called the top three best stalls of the event, which was really nice for a first timer. That was fun. But also we found out that there were actually a lot of vegetarian people visiting the Wild Food Festival. Don't ask me why. So we are a bit of a lifesaver for them. But we gave out 1,000 leaflets talking about vegetarianism and the effects that meat has on the environment and on animals. Our images were so thought-provoking that we were they was kept being photographed by people in films, and it was just funny. And, you know, even TV was wandering around looking at things, and, you know, they actually framed the item on TV around our store, which was really good as well. So it was a hit, and we've decided to make that an annual event in Quebec, because, you know, 20,000 people will visit the Wild Food Festival, and it's really important to show people that you can have good food without hurting animals, and that's what we did, and we sold all the food that we had. We sold all of it, which surprised us because we had a lot. And, you know, it was a great thing for us to do. And people really appreciated it, even all the farmers. So we even had farmers coming up to us to say, if you keep on going with this sort of food, you put us out of business, which was sort of fun for them to say that. But it was good. So, yeah.
I don't think you have heart disease on a vegan diet, is that correct? It cuts it down.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't say you can't get heart disease, yeah, because you can still be unhealthy on a vegan diet. It depends what you eat.
I agree.
But certainly on your average vegan diet, you would be a hell of a lot better off than on an average meat diet. And it's not only heart disease, it's cancers, and there's all sorts of other diabetes. You know, look at the obesity problem that's hitting the Western world at the moment. I don't know many obese vegans or vegetarians, and I'm sure not many people do. So certainly the eating of saturated fats through dairy produce and meat is a leading cause of ill health in humans. You know, I sometimes say, oh, it's the revenge of the animals. We kill them and eat them, and well, they kill us by giving us disease. And people don't like to hear it, but it's the truth. That's what's happening. And you know, even I can take myself as an example from the point of view. So I've been a vegetarian for over 20 years, but not a vegan. And I always suffered from asthma-related problems. And when I turned vegan about 8 years ago, that just disappeared. I've thrown away my inhaler, never used the thing again. And that's because of the dairy product. My system didn't agree with dairy, and it gave me asthma. And moving away from that, it took about 4 or 5 months to clear up, and never had it again. And you know, and I was an asthmatic for over 30 years. So it shows you that it can actually have real good health benefits for people, and even people in the medical world will be saying it. A lot of doctors will tell people, you know, dairy can cause asthma, and if you've got children with those problems, you might want to change to soy milk and see how that goes. And you know, it's an easy thing, and a lot of people say, "Well, when you're a vegetarian, it's really difficult." Well, it's not. It's in New Zealand, it's very, very easy to be a vegetarian. When you become a vegan, it's a little bit harder. You've got to pay a bit more attention to it. But once you're vegan for a couple of months, it becomes second nature. And you know, I've been a vegan for almost 10 years now, and you know, it's easy. I don't know any better, and my health certainly has benefited from it. The animals certainly have benefited from them. The environment has benefited from it. So, yeah.
Win-win-win.
Absolutely. There's nothing to lose in that one.
There's a saying, if you could see through the walls of an abattoir, everyone would become a vegetarian.
Absolutely. If you would have to factory farm and people can see it, factory farming would be banned. We even have thought of hiring a shop window and factory farm animals in it ourselves, just as a showcase, and say, look, this is actually what happens behind those closed doors. We couldn't do it because we simply could not do that to the animals. But can you imagine if somebody would do that? Can you imagine the power of walking past the shops and suddenly seeing pigs in crates and battery hens in cages and everything? People would be outraged. People would be calling the SPCA and calling MEF and the police and saying, well, what are you doing about this? This is terrible. Forgetting that it happens a couple of kilometers down the road on the farm where you can't see it.
Very true, very true. And just in closing,
yep.
you still have a relationship with the other big organizations, Whisper and I4, or you're just separate?
Well, we are Savers in New Zealand based, a separate organization, but we do have a very healthy working relationship with a lot of international and national animal advocacy groups. So we, like for instance, we're working on the Marineland issue at the moment, trying to convince Napier City Council not to replace their dolphins, and we're working together with that, with WISPA and with the National SPCA in New Zealand. And we're also working on other issues with international organizations. So, yeah, it's just becoming a much more organized international community, which is very, very healthy. And that's, we're all there for the same thing, so we have to work together.